Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 482. I want to say 482. I'm joined today by Alistair Green, and a lot of you will be very, very excited about that. I've not seen Al do that many podcasts. He's done a few, but a lot of you will have enjoyed his social media work because it's wonderful, because he's wonderful. And yeah, I was really excited. I did a tweet a little while ago saying, who would you like to hear on the podcast? And Alistair was requested a few times. I said I'd be well up for that. He said he'd be well up for that. And ladies and gentlemen, here we are, well up for it. So we had a lovely chat. I'm going to get straight into it. Obviously, we're brought to you as ever by SpeechOfElemaRecords.com. Loads of good stuff over there. Patreon.com/ScroobiusPip is where you can support the podcast for just $1 a month. And Twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipYo is where you can watch all my weekly, often daily creativity and nonsense. So anyway, without further ramblings, this is episode 482 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Mr. Alistair Green. Start recording here. I've rushed into the record there because we were talking about Metal Nights in Romford, and that's a strong memory for me, man. I don't think I've really chatted about it in a long time. Weirdly, I was trying to find workout playlist recently, and I was trying desperately to remember the name of the Metal Night at Hollywood to see if anyone had put a playlist together.
Yeah, because I thought
I'm now old enough where I'll be motivated by angry music of my teens. And I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, you cannot get on that rowing machine without some Soundgarden.
Exactly. Yeah.
I can't do my workout today. There's no Metallica.
The thing that has always has got me in recent years, as I've grown up and I got really into hip-hop and learnt about hip-hop a lot, it's always been a mystery to me which hip-hop has crossover to Metal Nights. So Jurassic 5 will get played, Cypress Hill will get played.
100%.
The Beastie Boys. Yeah. But what is the logic? Like, there's no clear distinction of how these were the chosen ones.
Yeah, yeah. There was a big crossover. And I think it, I don't know what came first, chicken or egg, but some of it is to do with clothing, merch stuff. Do you remember the old shops that sold, you know, you had basic sort of long-sleeved T-shirt things, and they either had Pearl Jam on them, Cypress Hill. You know what I mean? There was a big crossover with the bands. Or Tupac. Tupac, R.I.P. Yeah, well, I suppose he's alive then.
Exactly.
Imagine someone wore that with some sort of suit, say, who are you, Mystic Meg? R.I.P. Why, what's happened? Wait and see.
You'll find out. Not saying much.
Yeah, you'll see.
Megadeth had a lot of all over print t-shirts, and I remember being really excited about all over print. A print on the front, that's lovely, but an all over print, that means I'm a real fan.
I used to like it when they had the tour dates on the back. Never been to the tour, never been to the tour. I'm wearing the t-shirt, mate.
Which one did you go to? Oh, long story. Anyway, is Big Ball Brad playing tonight?
Yeah, I didn't realize you've been to Reading and Leeds. Yeah, what, same weekend? Yeah.
Yeah, just got the train up. It's fine. I should introduce you. I'm joined today by Alistair Green. How are you, sir?
Yeah, good, thanks. I'm all right.
I'm really pleased to be chatting to you because I've watched so much of your stuff, both of your self-created stuff and things that you're in. So there's loads I want to talk to you about. But do you enjoy podcasts? Because people tend to have a mixed emotions kind of towards them.
Oh, yeah? What do people say? What's the bad thing that people say?
I don't know. I have to really want to do a podcast to do a podcast, if that makes sense. Right. I'm no good at just the turning it on. Just, oh, hi, I'm here, I'm just a guest. I couldn't, like, it's why I'm glad we're kind of past the times of doing, or I used to do it a bit when I did music. Occasionally we'd have to do, like, regional radio stuff. And I was awful, because I can't do that kind of, hey, I'm here and we're going to be playing on Thursday at the wherever else. Yeah. I can't do that. But yeah, I think that's, there's some people who just love jumping on podcasts, and there's some that, you always strike me as someone who likes to do what they want to do. if that makes sense.
Right.
Is that the case?
Yeah, I think that's true, yeah. I mean, with podcasts, I do get asked to do a lot of them. I don't do most of them, mainly because I don't know the people. Yeah. I mean, we've never met, but I like your stuff, and, you know, I've listened to your stuff before and seen you before and thought, oh, no, that'd be fun. But a lot of the time I just think, oh, I can't be bothered. It's mostly that. It's mostly, I think, a lot of when people ask you to podcast, you think, well, what for? But, you know, I'm happy to sort of have a chat or whatever.
It's fairly low maintenance
for me.
Because exactly as you're saying, if you don't know what it's going to be, you're aware it's normally going to be an hour. And my nightmare is the thought of starting, being 10 minutes in and going, ah, fuck,
I'm here
for an hour and I'm not enjoying this.
I'll tell you the worst ones are when they go, they message me and they go, do you do the podcast? I go, yeah, maybe. Well, as long as it involves no prep, I'm not doing any prep for a podcast. And I go, no, it's no prep at all. And then the day before, they go, oh, by the way, here's 48 questions you have to have an answer for.
Yeah.
Like that stuff, it winds me up because I think, oh, God, you know, it's just a lot of, and you know, it just seems a lot of hard work. But what I'm saying is yours is so rubbish. You've got no, you make no effort. There's no questions.
You're
winning it.
Anything. We'll make it up as we go along.
That's better. I think that's the better way of doing things. For me, that's the best podcasts are the ones where the format is so loose that you can just go, you know, you can just sort of go off on one.
The small advantage of those ones that have set questions or a theme or a topic is that they can have anyone on and it can be a good podcast. I turn down a lot of people for the same reason I turn down going on podcasts, because I think I don't know that person, and if I'm not going to enjoy this for an hour, I'd rather not do it.
Yeah.
I've got mates, I won't name any of them, but I've got mates who've got podcasts that have a set, here's the same questions every episode, that have had people on that I've talked to them after the podcast and they're like, yeah, I'm not really sure what he does. Like that's how little research they've done, but it's such an easy format that they can just go, yeah, I got pitched them and we had them on and it was fine.
Right,
so it's kind of, it's a good get out. But yeah, homework ahead of the podcast is a nightmare.
Yeah, I think some of them are good to, like stuff like Off Menu I like because they can go back to the, you know, they can go back to some format. Even if it's quite loose, you can sort of work your way back to it if you need to.
Yeah. And it's weird, actually, because we're saying that, but I've heard you on some great podcasts that have homework. So, it genuinely comes down to if you can be asked or not on all of these things. Like Moon Under the Stars?
Moon Under the Water. Actually, to be fair, just to row back on what I said, there wasn't a lot of prep, but there was a bit of prep for that. But that one was fun, actually.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm saying is there's no logic to anything I say. You should disregard it. I just talk. All I do is moan, and then people go, yeah, but what about that? I go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually all right. That's actually good. But I like to genuinely ask, how's your week coming along? What's been going on? Is it a good week? Is it a bad week? Are you
A lot of things annoying me this week. I mean, things annoy me every week, like... There's a water stain on the ceiling in the kitchen. That's annoying me because I've got to get the council to speak to them upstairs and sort it all out. And I've just found out it's actually a leak. One of their pipes is leaking. A builder told me that and I believed him. So, yeah, just a lot of... Yeah, I don't know. When you've got a lot of things to do, it's quite stressful. You know, I don't know where to start on things. I've literally said one thing. There's a water stain on the ceiling. I don't know where to begin.
No, but you alluded to more because a builder told you it was a leak. That means there's been a builder somewhere. So it's all you've laid it beautifully there. There's a depth to the story that we don't know as listeners.
Right. I want to make it really clear I've got friends. Yeah. That's as close to a friend as I've got. I just ring up a builder. Do you want to come round? Anyone? Do you want to read my electricity meter?
Yeah, come on, let's be part of it. I mean, obviously, when there's annoying things going on and things annoying you, obviously, by the nature of the use of the word annoying, it's annoying. But how much of it also kind of sparks off and you go, well, I'm going to get a character or a little bit or a sketch out of that? How much of there is mining your own misery and turning it into a positive?
I think some of the stuff I do is purely motivated by that. It's a thing that will annoy me so much that I'll deliberately write something to make that point. You know, I'm trying to think of an example, but It's about 50% things I've just noticed and then I think are funny and just spun them out into something longer. And they're the ones that are normally the sort of single take ones. Or I'll overhear someone say something and think, oh, that's quite, you know, I know that person. Or sometimes it's something that will just annoy me so much that I will start from scratch and build something around it so that you'll get the point. If you're watching it, you'll go, all right, see the point. Without hitting someone over the head with a hammer, really. But so often it's written through fewer sort of frustration at something. I think probably social media guides that a bit because you see people coalescing around an opinion that's wrong. And you go, oh, God, you know, this is so annoying that people think that.
Yeah.
I mean, probably there's no point to even pushing against that, but it's basically a way to say, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. I'm going, you're wrong.
100%.
And just putting it into it, it's just a different way of communicating that objection to discourse or whatever.
And a weirdly more productive way, because as you say, trying to actually argue against these things in a genuine manner is just pointless because there's too many dickheads and too much nonsense.
Right.
I was watching a guy this morning who was explaining that the reason he thinks the earth is flat is because of our eyes, and we've all got eyes. And that was the bit that he kept coming back to. We've all got eyes, right? You know, as if that proves his point. But the colour bit of our eyes is like a straight line under the dome. And he believes the earth, we live on that straight line. And there's like a dome.
I see.
It's like the eye over it. And then he kept coming back as if it proves on it again. And because, you know, we've all got eyes. It's like, no, yeah, I get that. I get that bit.
I'm with you up to that point.
He drawed it out and everything. He drawed a little picture.
There's
stuff behind the eyes and there's stuff under us, but, you know, I mean, we've all got eyes.
That stuff, I think, I mean, flat earth stuff, I don't engage with at all. I don't think I've ever mentioned it in anything I've done, purely because I think and hope it's such a negligible presence or problem that I think it's not even worth considering. And you're sinking into that world of like madness. If you even engage with it, it's the same as chemtrails, really. It's so mad that it's not worth engaging with. And it doesn't really, I don't know if it affects anyone directly, as opposed to sort of other conspiracy theories, which are, you know, make them more difficult to, you know, live. And sort of, you know, if they're disrupting your life in some way or annoying you, or if it's growing, you know, some stuff I guess is dangerous, like 9/11 conspiracies or whatever. Or I mean, maybe it's good to push back on all of this stuff, really, because it's all part of that same idea that, you know, we're being lied to about. And you go, well, the real crime is, you know, your government are doing this to you, or the, you know, this government is doing this. There's no conspiracy. They're doing it in open fucking broad daylight, calling out on it. You know what I mean? There's enough things to be pissed off about without you, you know, pissing around with flat earth stuff. You want to be, you know, it's there in plain sight.
I couldn't agree more. It annoyed me a lot during Trump's presidency when people would be coming up with stuff that can't really be verified to get angry with him about. And it's like,
right,
we don't need to get angry about that. There's loads of stuff that's clear in front of us. Like he's literally tweeting it, or he's literally on video doing it. Let's forget about this bit that supposedly he planned it all along, and it was this and it was that. No, let's get angry for the real reasons.
That's actually a really, really, really good example as well about things like Pizzagate, or you know this idea that Hillary Clinton and a bunch of other people were, I don't know what they were doing, abusing children in a Pizza Hut shop or whatever, the basement of a pizza, or something mad like that, which did have quite a considerable amount of traction, so which did become problematic. But how you even begin to tackle something so insane is, I don't know how you do it. And again, it's another example of going, well, it's in plain sight. You've got Jeffrey Epstein actually doing this stuff. You know, these people are doing it for real, and you're coming up with this weird conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's actually happening.
I'm always up for talking about pizza, but, you know, it let's...
You know, again, pizzas are flat, right?
There's better ways to talk...
pizzas around, do you? We've all got eyes.
It's undeniable, really. Our eyes are kind of like calzones, so like the flat bit, and then over the top, it all links together. I should kind of explain for anyone who's not aware. I first became aware of you because of the videos that you do on social media. Brett Goldstein, our mutual friend, would go on about them all the time and share them all. And like all things on social media, I ignore it the first few times and then
that's,
go,
that's sweet.
All right, yeah. Okay, I've had four opportunities to watch this. I will watch it on the fifth.
Right, right.
And then became completely addicted. So when did you start kind of doing these things yourself, and how did it all kind of take off? Because they are just often characters and observations as such, or observations through characters, I guess.
Yeah, but I think sort of 2019 started doing it, and then I can't remember the first couple were just, I think it was just mucking about on my phone and posting something, not really thinking about it.
Because it was back then that Brett was talking about, because I'm sure I heard on another podcast and they kept referencing you started doing them during the pandemic, and I was thinking, I'm sure I was watching them before all of that. And
No, it was way before that. Well, it wasn't way before that, but it was 2019, and then once I sort of realised what it was, I kind of did a lot. I could do them quite quickly. And then a promoter contacted me, show and tell company contacted me and said, do you want to put them on in the cinema? Yeah. And that's the first time I did that at the cinema, Prince Charles Cinema in London, where we put them all together into a film. And I thought, oh, right, it's a film. So, and I didn't think anyone would come, and then it's sold out. So I thought, oh, right, maybe this is a thing. And that was 2019. So I can't remember when, not maybe September, October or whatever. So it was already a thing then. And then obviously we had the pandemic in March, and I'd already had some other shows booked in, which then got cancelled. But so then the pandemic, it's sort of weird to think of that really, that, you know, we're only really emerging from that now, you know, so I don't know. But anyway, so that's when it started. And then, and then I sort of hit upon a formula. And I mean, back then there wasn't that many people doing that kind of thing, I don't think. I mean, there probably was a few, but, and then, so I think really the pandemic, a lot of people kind of turned to it. And now it's kind of, I've noticed like there's a formula to a lot of stuff you see now, particularly sort of TikTok stuff or whatever, of writing it, which I don't really adhere to. Or mine, I try and ignore that really.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see anyone doing what I'm doing. It's just, I think that's one of the sort of frustrations really of doing stuff online is that, especially if you talk to sort of people in TV or whatever, and they go, oh, you're one of those, they think that everyone online does the same thing. When really, you look at what people are doing online, there's so much variety.
Yeah.
There's much more than TV, much more. In terms of sketches or characters or whatever, people can knock this stuff out.
Yeah, it happens with all of these things that people, I remember when podcasting, like I've been doing this a while now, I remember people would go, I'm not really into podcasts. It's like, you know, it's not a specific thing. It's a medium. It can be anything. There's probably is a podcast that you would be into. It's like saying I'm not into music. It's like, there's loads of different music.
Yeah.
And similarly, people will bunch your a content creator or a TikToker or whatever else, or an online comedian, and they'll think it's a certain thing, and you'll be like, well, no, there's so much out there. But just quickly, I mean, how great is the Prince Charles, man? I think they're such an important place for putting on, because they put on what the fuck they want to put on, it seems, and they can turn around and a promoter can go, oh, we want to put on a compilation of Alistair Green's Instagram or Twitter videos. It's amazing.
Yeah, they're brilliant. They're lovely people. They're great. They do a good job there. It's one of those places as well where you think, if it closes one day, you'll go, oh, I wish I'd gone there more. So I think people should go there. You know, make sure you support those kind of places, I think.
I used to curate a film night there and had the exact thing that you're talking about of, I started to, you know, really struggle and have to push really hard to get people in the door. And then as soon as I stopped, not a week goes by without someone asking me to bring back the film night or they never got to make it along. It's like, you should have come when it was on then, kind of thing. Yeah, again, that applies for all of the Prince Charles stuff. It's like, it's easy to see that what they're putting on and go, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But then actually attend and support.
Yeah.
It's a weird one. Do you ever feel pressure with big news stories or current events to do some kind of comment or reference to it? Or are you good at letting an idea guide you? Like, if an idea comes naturally, you go with it. Do you ever find yourself going, well, what can I do on this subject?
Sometimes, if it's, I think probably I used to do that more maybe in the pandemic because everyone was at home and everyone's online and we're watching the same stupid speech by Boris Johnson or whatever, or Matt Hancock or whatever. And I think at that time it's like, it's kind of a communal experience, you know, that you can take the piss out of this thing. It doesn't interest me as much as other stuff. I mean, the brutal sort of cynical reality of it is if you do that stuff, you get a lot more traction online because people like that, you know, and they, and Twitter rewards, if you people like retweeting political opinions that align with their own so that their own followers can see what type of person there are. They are, you know, you know, you want to say, I am this person. So I think that there's that element to it. So, yeah, sometimes I still do that. Sometimes, but it's less and less really. Just, it's quite, one of the things with it, the problems with that is it's quite ephemeral. So, you know, Liz Truss can do a speech or whatever, and then by tomorrow everyone's moved on and you've spent quite a bit of time on it. I'd also think there's people who do that better than me, that kind of stuff. So let them do that. There's a couple that I go back to now and again, like Matt Hancock, I go back to now and again, even though it's sort of more funny to me that he's completely irrelevant now. So he still kind of makes me laugh as a character. I don't know what it is. There's a few of them, those are, you know, who were around at the time, like Grant Shapps, Matt Hancock, those kind of, you know, I don't know how you describe those people, but you know what I mean. So, yeah, but sometimes respond to something, the news. But again, like, the news is so fast moving now that you do something about it, the next day it's over. You know, you get 1 or 2 days longevity out of it. And if I'm thinking about doing, you know, showing things in 6 months' time, you know, on a cinema screen or whatever, I don't know, people going, wait, who's that? Who's that again? So who's Kwasi Kwarteng? You know, so it's quite fast moving. So
and tough with the Tories because it is, which job was that Tory doing at that point? Because they do all just shuffle around and go out of the public eye and back in, and scandal was attached to to that one. But it must be a buzz for you when something does just present itself. And the one that always comes to mind for me is, I swear I saw them almost on back-to-back tweets when the Jubilee was happening and that guy had his story of walking with the Queen and they bumped into some tourists. And then you perfectly sent that up and adapted it. And it felt like, this is just, they've given you a free ball there. It's like an open goal. It seemed perfect. That must be a buzz where it's like, right, I can do that immediately. This is easy.
That's one of those ones as well where I wonder, I don't generally read the replies now, but some ones like that I do because I wonder if people are annoyed or not. Because I'm not really, that one, I'm not really taking the piss out of anyone. I'm just doing an impression of a guy going, she had a wicked sense of humour, and then, you know, when it's quite a boring thing. But so, yeah, but it also, with someone like the Queen, people get very angry on either side about she's quite a sort of divisive figure, obviously.
I can't remember if I apologised to you because I retweeted that one and I had some of my American followers annoyed, but annoyed at the Queen because they didn't realise it was a parody and a joke. They thought it was a genuine story. And they were like, I don't know why people are finding this amusing. That's incredibly rude of her. I don't care who you are. You shouldn't talk to people like that. And all this, I'm like, how are you? How is this?
Yeah, I think that's a funny one with social media where sometimes you think, what, how could you possibly think this is real?
Yeah.
As opposed to like some other stuff, you think, oh, I can see why people, you know, you think that that might be real. But I don't know. Even then, I don't think I've ever seen anything and thought, oh, I don't know if that's real or not.
Mate, I had to confess it on a podcast recently because I had Charlie Cooper on from this country. Yeah. And genuinely, the first time I turned on that, I said to him or to the director, I'd always thought that people who say, oh yeah, when The Office came out, there's loads of people who just thought it was a documentary. I always thought, fuck off, they did. That's such bollocks. Yeah. No one thought it was a documentary. Yeah. I flicked over to the first episode of This Country and me and my brother had at least 10 minutes of going, is this real? This is the most amazing. Yeah. And then it clicked, but genuinely had that moment. So where I've previously turned my nose up at people claiming to oh yeah, I didn't know, it's like, no, 100% did. So I guess it happens.
I think that's probably why it's that program is so good though, is because it's rooted in, they never go too you know, too mad. It's always rooted in some sort of reality. I've never seen observations as tight as those on that show. Like that thing with a pizza in the oven or putting it on a different shelf and all that is so funny.
Yeah,
and just because it's such a well-observed thing, I think that's a good sort of way to write, maybe.
And just all the references as well, they never go for the big everyone will, not that everyone will get it, but everyone will relate to it. But it just means that when you do, it means all the more. I always remember me and my brother just cracking up when at one point Curtin's talking about, I'm sure it's Curtin, he's talking about being the last one there and everyone's left and it's all these younger kids now. And he just paused and went, "I'm Tony in Hollyoaks." And I've not watched Hollyoaks in years, but I knew exactly who he meant. And it was such a fucking deep cut. It was perfect.
Also, I really like that commitment to not giving a fuck about the American market for selling your format abroad.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah, I love it.
Specific.
You mentioned not keeping an eye on replies and that. How good are you at, or do you keep an eye on numbers, and does it influence you? Because it, you know, particularly with anything on social media or anything in the entertainment industry, if you have something that goes down well, it can even subconsciously make you start wanting to do more of that kind of one rather than what you actually want to do. Where have you landed on all that, I guess?
I'm very sort of careful with my exposure to social media. So I'll post stuff now and again, but I make a conscious effort to not be near my phone for like big amounts of the day. You have to be careful if you follow news a lot. It's very tempting because Twitter is really rolling news a lot of the time. Well, it depends what accounts you follow, but rolling actual news, cultural news, whatever, you know, you'll see something trending, Chesney Hawks or whatever, you go, what's that about? You know, you want to keep up with these things. So I try and sort of stay out of it. Sometimes I read your replies. In answer to the question, no, it doesn't guide me really. One time I did a Matt Hancock video and I saw that it had about 1 million views or something, and then I maybe did it again after that, and then I sort of got bored of it. But, you know, sometimes I think, oh, you're too thick to understand that one. You know, sometimes I'll do a good one and I'll think, you're just too fucking stupid. Or like, also mine are not, I don't cut on a lot of mine. It's one take, which is completely against the grain of how people do social media, especially TikTok stuff, comedy stuff. So I think maybe people switch off. Like, oh, fucking hell, what's this? What's just some prick talking? So, no, sometimes I'll notice it and think, oh, that one hit a nerve, and I won't know why, you know, but I deliberately don't title them as obvious things either. Sometimes they're titled something quite obscure or abstract. Like, there's one called Beef. It's called Beef when really it could be called, you know, upper middle class woman alienated from her child or something like that. That feels to me quite heavy. But then other times I call them what they are. There's like a guy, it's called Man Trying to Impress a Barmaid or something like that. And it's just some guy being annoying to a barmaid. But so sometimes, but ones like that, I never assume, that one's very popular, which I didn't really assume that. I just thought it was, you know, but then you can sort of figure it out. You go, all right, this is a very common experience for women who've worked in, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I did one the other day about, called Passive Aggressive Script Supervisor. And it's kind of this woman who on film set, if you're filming something, after a woman comes over an iPad and goes, yeah, you got that one totally wrong, that line. Do you want to do it again? You really did make a pig's ear of it. Like that kind of thing. And I think it did okay. But then I thought, probably a more universal thing. I could have easily done that one and called it a passive-aggressive shock manager or something. And it probably would have got a lot more attraction because it's a more universal experience. And I did think straight afterwards, I thought, oh, it might be quite interesting to record it word for word. Well, not word for word, slightly change the wording and call it passive-aggressive shock manager and then watch what happens. But I didn't bother. I didn't bother mainly because I think people would think I was just being lazy. And I'd be curious. I might do that.
I love it because that is, again, it's niche, but it's incredibly relatable that, again, the idea that all you're trying to do in this scene is get the exact... I had one recently, which I didn't have a lot to do, but I did have to walk in and I had this thing and I had to stick my head through and all this. And I kept saying we'd be there before noon and I was meant to say we'd be there by noon. And every time she'd come up and you said bye, you said before noon again, didn't you?
Can we
try and make sure you get it as back?
It's horrible.
And that was the thing that I had like one line. I was there for one day, I had one line in it. It was all the worse. If you're in a bigger role, it's like you can take this, but I meant to get one line and I can't get it. I'm a fucking amateur.
But also I sort of think, oh come on. Oh, what difference does it make? Just, you know what I mean?
My character's not important. It doesn't make a difference. Just let me have it. Well, I mean, how do you find that then? Because since your stuff blew up online, that stuff that you're in complete control of, you're the script editor, you're the cameraman, you're everything. How do you find it on sets? Because you were in or are in the award-winning The Great with Ellie Fanning and Nicholas Holt and previous guest Sacha Dhawan, and particularly with period stuff, there's a lot going on and there's often not a lot of room for not a lot of wriggle room as such. So acting, I think, in general it almost feels to me as if one of the jobs that you might be unaware, but you're the least in control. Like there's so many other people in control, the cameraman, the director, all of these, the editor, there's so much that's out of your control. So I guess, how do you find that going from the two?
Something like The Great is such a well-written show. Everyone on it is so good. I just don't have, you know, I haven't got the ego to go, oh, guys, I think it should be like this. I'm happy to be there. Do you know what I mean? I'm just like, tell me what to do and I'll do the best I can do, you know. Because a lot of stuff I just turn down that I get offered. But so it's really only, it's nearly always either people I know, although I didn't know anyone on The Great, they just offered it to me. But that show, it's nothing to do with me, how they do it. You know, it's just, I'll do the best I can with what, you know, you tell me if it's shit and I'll do it different. You know what I mean? Like, I'm quite happy to play that role on a show like that, which I'm not a massive part of that show. But I really enjoy it. It's a totally different kind of experience, obviously, because it's, as you say, it's a big show with a lot of different cast in scenes who all say something. So it takes a long time to just do one scene. Can be like half a day or even a day, you know. But yeah, so it's interesting. It's just a completely different kind of, you know, a completely different sort of thing to do.
I mean, how was it then to work with someone who must be an inspiration, an icon in Mr. Alan Partridge? There was a load of people who I know who got to do bits on This Time or things like that. And again, I can't even imagine it. I can't even imagine being on set. And again, it's not in, I mean, I'm a big fan of Steve Coogan, but it's not even Steve Coogan walking on. It's Alan Partridge walking on or being.
So do you know what happened on that? It's quite sort of degrading for me, but I'll tell you.
Yeah, I definitely want to know. Yes, 100%.
Okay. I think it was the brothers who write it.
The Gibbons.
I think it was Neil or someone like that had seen a lot of my stuff and they asked me to do it. And they didn't really tell me what it involved. They're like, oh, you just come in and you do a bit of improv out a window, you know, and Steve's going to run outside on the street and shout out. I was like, yeah, sure. And then I got there and there was a sort of script on the day and I thought, oh, right, okay. And then in the end, I was just up in this window in this building. I don't know if they used it, but I fucked it up. I fucked up the line because I looked out the window. I've never done this before. This is so unprofessional. I looked out the window and I was like, and I saw him shout at me. And in my head, I was like, oh, my God, it's Alan Partridge. And I just forgot the line. I totally fucked it up.
Exactly.
And
I could see that happening.
I've never told anyone this, but it's funny you should mention that because the video I did the other day called Passive Aggressive Script Supervisor, that was from that show. Even though the script supervisor was 100% not passive aggressive, they were really nice and they were just trying to help. But 100% someone said to me, is there anything we can do to help you remember the line? And that stuck in my head. It was like a traumatising thing to say. But they didn't mean it in a bad way. They're like, we've got to get this, you know, we've got to get this shot. And I was like, oh, no, it's fine. But it was like, and in the end, you can't see me. No one knows I'm in there because you can't see me, thank God. Like, right, the camera's like miles away and I'm just in a window. But a weird thing happened online where people were like, oh, my God, This is a, but some people were tweeting about it going, this is a brilliant in-joke. It's Alistair Green in his room and he's just come to the window. And I was like, oh yeah, that's what it is. I was like, the reality is they didn't trust me to do more than that, quite rightly as well. If you're a casting director or a writer listening to this, do not cast me anything. I'm completely incapable and I would advise against it.
I love that I intentionally framed the question because I would have the exact same thing of just being on set with Alan. And again, the fact that you're up there, you looked over, fuck, that's Alan Partridge. How is that? I completely relate.
Just like, I didn't freeze or anything. I mean, I don't go, oh, this, you know, not in awe or anything. I was just like, oh, right, I used to watch that show. I was like that in my head, just in another world. And then I was like, oh, shit.
I love it. I spoke to a Charlie Cooper recently, as I mentioned, and he was saying he recently had a load of scenes with Adrian Brody, and numerous times Adrian Brody would be delivering his amazing lines, and Charlie, rather than being prepared to react or do his lines, just kept thinking, fucking hell, that's Adrian Brody. It's like, no, yeah, stop thinking that. And as soon as you want to get something out of your head, you can't help but that's the only thing that's going to be in your head. So
yeah,
I love it. Well, I mean, kind of a combination of two things here, because you spoke about you often just do things that are mates of yours, but then we've also talked about The Great being a huge production and Coogan and Partridge being a huge thing. How was Ted Lasso? Because it's a weird combination there, because Brett Goldstein, obviously a friend of yours, obviously very relaxed, but by the time you were in an episode, it was probably the biggest show on the planet, or one of. It's like, it's now Brett's won Emmys 2 years in a row for it, the writing has won Emmy, everything. It's this huge show. So could you go on and just be there with your mate, or did you, you know, was it more of a, oh shit, I've come on because a mate's asked me to do this and it's a mate's thing, but it's also a fucking huge, huge show.
I mean, he just messaged me and went, do you want to be in Ted Lasso? And I went, yeah, sure. I mean, that's really how most, I would say 90% of things I'm in are that, is someone messaging me. So this very, very rarely, and I know I'm not sort of sounding like a prick or annoying anyone here, but very rarely there's a casting director or anything like that. Basically, so it's just easier if it's a mate, you know. So he just said, do you want to do this thing? And I went, yeah, sure. I don't know if I've gotten him into trouble for that, but he'll get over it. But anyway, I just thought, oh, I don't want to get this wrong. So yeah, it's interesting. It's sort of a different experience. I mean, it's quite similar to The Great, really. Although I think I remember with Ted Lasso, I remember they sort of change the script when you're doing it, or you do one and they go, what about say this? And they sort of change quite a few lines, I think, in the end. But no, that was really, yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
I didn't have that thought at the time, like, oh, this is a massive show. I think I just thought, oh, I'll try and do this. I'll try and not be shit for my mate. That's my acting technique.
Let's do it. I love it. I want to talk a little bit about, you probably won't know this because I'm sure you're not keeping an eye on the news, but Self-Esteem was robbed of a Mercury last night. I think she should have won the Mercury. When I was getting into Self-Esteem for Rebecca coming on the podcast, going through the music videos, and who pops up but old Al Green? How did that come about, and how was that? It's all in Margate as well, so again, it's where my partner lives. It was all very familiar and unfamiliar.
I think she asked me. I can't remember now. But yeah, that was fun. Yeah, that was, just down in Margate, did that for the day. Yeah, so I've never been to Margate before.
I love it.
It was nice.
And just playing a shit boyfriend, basically.
Yeah, I think the idea was it was sort of a piss take of another video that I wasn't familiar with, and I've forgotten what it was now. Like, it was sort almost a sort of parody of music videos. But in the end, yeah, I was just basically a prick. Yeah, and then she gets annoyed with me, and you know, it's kind of a sort of story, I think, of a rubbish boyfriend who she doesn't realise until, you know, she's initially sort of swept up. Yeah. In this sort of romance, and I turn out to be a prick, which really most people are aware of quite quickly.
Yeah. I love it.
This take 3 minutes.
I swear I'm not just going to work through your IMDb, but there's two more things I really want to talk about, and one of them is Flowers, because I think that was one of the most underrated shows. I think Will Sharpe's amazing, Olivia Colman, Julian Barrett, Daniel Rigby, Georgina Campbell, Desiree Akhavan, Sophie DiMartino, who blew up again in Loki recently. How was that to work on? Because it's a proper dark, serious comedy, if that makes sense. It's a really weird mix, like tonally. It really stands out. I can't think of anything else like it, that it's on such heavy and dark subjects, but is so funny and the characters are so beautifully observed. How was that?
Yeah, that was great. That was Will Sharpe, who writes it and directs it. He's a really talented guy. This is quite a few years ago now. I don't think I was doing much then, but I remember him asking me to come. I think I'd met him, and I can't remember now. I think I'd already met Will once or twice through a mutual friend, and then he asked me to come in to audition for it, and there wasn't any script, and he said, well, just talk about anything. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just improvised, you know, I just literally talked utter shit for like 2 minutes, and he recorded it, and he was like, yeah, that's good. Yeah, we'll use that. So, and that was that. I can't remember much about it. I think it was filmed in this weird house. I certainly didn't, because I hadn't, obviously, that was the first series of it, so I hadn't seen it. So I had no idea it would look like that. Yeah. You know, he's got a very particular way of making something look and feel that, I mean, I suppose you can't tell when you're filming stuff, I don't know. But
yeah. But
obviously the script was funny and there was a lot of sort of dark stuff in it. But I didn't really have any idea of what it would look like in the end or what it'd be. But he's an interesting guy. He's got a lot of ideas going on.
Yeah, he's really good. I had him on the podcast and just picked at his brain as much as I could, because I think exactly as you say, he's got so many ideas and such a distinct voice, the most annoying thing that people always say with scripts. But he has got a distinct voice and a distinct style about him. And yeah, I think he's a really interesting dude. I'm excited for all that's ahead for him. And it's weird. I never really think about that until someone mentions it, that when something has got such a visual style, the actors aren't going to know about that until it comes out. If you think of the Coens or whomever else kind of thing, where it's such a visual style, it doesn't look like that when you're filming it. That's all kind of exactly, in the camera and in the lighting and all this. So that must be mad to then go, oh, right, that's where I was. I'm in there.
I was probably, I mean, maybe someone more experienced would notice things that I didn't. Like, they'd notice, you know, I was putting on that lens, that means they're going to, you know, it's going to look like that or whatever. But, you know, you don't really notice those things, or I don't anyway.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I had no idea what it would come out like. But that's actually sort of a big component of it, is that kind of feel of it, I think.
Yeah.
That aesthetic that he's got.
Yeah, I love it. Well, the last one I want to kind of talk about is Ghosts. And I mainly want to talk about it because I had Tim Key on and he was saying, Ghost feels like a show he probably would have been in, but he isn't in it. Because there's so many comedians in it. And it got me thinking about what shows. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that you were in Friday Night Dinner. That's one that I'd be like, oh, was he? Yeah, that makes sense. And Horrible Histories, I'd believe. What shows that you haven't been in do you think people would be least surprised to hear?
I'll tell you what, I'll say the other day, I described the film Paddington as that film with some of the comedians in. Because there's certain films where you go, oh, right, he's in that, or he's in that. And I think the latest one, so I'll tell you the latest one, because people keep going to me, I'm in the new Barbie film. I go, what? There's like some sort of Barbie film. But you always notice when there's like if more than two comedians say it, you go, all right, so there's some comedians in that film. I don't really get asked. I'm not in that world, really. I'm a bit outside. I'm sort of outside of all that stuff, really.
Yeah.
But now and again, I mean, Ghosts was the guys just messaging me and going, do you want to be in Ghosts? I was like, yeah, sure. It's because I like the show. So they're sort of the nicest people. They're people you go, come on, you must have, you've got bodies under the patio or something. They're too nice.
Yeah.
You know?
It doesn't surprise me at all, because you look at that whole cast and they're all of the ones I know are absolutely lovely. All the ones I don't know, I'm a fan of. And it just feels like, how's this all so easy?
Yeah, it's just a really nice,
I mean, I just did this little bit and went in one episode. It's just just one of those sort of things where everyone's just a nice day at work, really. Everyone's nice and friendly and very little guidance, actually. Just do it how you want it. But really, you know, it was really good.
I love it. I'm now just trying to think of more things. I wouldn't be surprised to hear you. And Paddington's a great one. It wouldn't be. Yeah. It wouldn't have surprised me if I'd looked on your IMD and Paddington was on there. What was the? There was a Beauty and the Beast or something recently. No, is it Beauty and the Beast that Ramesh and Acaster were both mice in it? I've not seen it. I've just heard them talk about it. And again, it was just very much clearly it was a load of comedians like, oh, we'll get some comedians as the mice.
Right. And it's funny that, isn't it? Yeah. It's funny. I don't think I can't think of anything I've been offered like that, of like the thing that has a lot of comedians in it. There's a few in production that I noticed that a lot of people in.
Yeah.
I mean, I sound like I'm put out by that. But so I didn't get asked.
A lot of people that I know in there. Yeah. No one's mentioned it to
Interesting.
Me.
Interesting.
Well, I'll start to wrap things up by asking, what's ahead? Because you've done all this amazing TV and stuff. Again, it turns out just purely because someone happened to ask you. Happened to say, do you want to do this? Why not? But you're also creating all this amazing stuff online. Do you have desires to write for TV or film? Are you just wanting to create for yourself? Do you want to write for other people? Like, what is the plan going forward, I guess?
So in the immediate future, I'm doing a tour of cinemas, which I haven't announced yet, that will start in December.
Amazing.
It's like 10 dates that I'm doing all around the UK. And the idea is it's a film, like I've done before, but slightly different stuff in it. And it's a film about the UK. It's a film about England. And I do sort of want to sell it that way. It's a legitimate film about England, but it's my sketches put together, right? Yeah. It's a film that no one's made a film like that before.
Yeah.
And I've obviously done it on my phone in my front room. So there's a part of me that's I'm sort of mocking myself a little bit, but also I'm saying, no, this is and there's nothing else as accurate about Britain as this, you know, what I'm giving you in this film. But also making it, you know, making a bit of a joke myself. So
I love it because when you did the screenings in 2019, it was essentially, here's the ones I've done. But since then, you've done so many and there's been so many things going on in the country that instantly I was thinking, well, what would you choose and what would you put together and how would it go together? So that's fascinating you've put together a film essentially that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a kind of scattershot kaleidoscope of sort of Britain, just things clashing against each other, different characters or whatever. You know, it's just all this, you know, it's just things that you recognise from England. It's basically little scenes taking place in the country somewhere that form some sort of mosaic of this idea of Britain now and where we are, etc., etc.
I love it.
Other than that, I've got I am doing a book, but I can't talk about that yet. But I mean, there's a few things I actually can't talk about. There's an audio thing. I have got a thing in development, a TV thing, but I think one of the things is trying to maintain the thing that you're doing, the sort of, not necessarily the aesthetic, but the sort of principle of what you're doing, and without it being interfered too much, you know?
Yeah.
Or there's things I can take from certain videos and go, oh, that's, you know, I can actually, that would be really interesting as a book or as a thing, rather than grasping at opportunities for the sake of it, you know, which I think can be a bit short-termist, or I mean, it's pretty, you know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm just sort of conscious of the fact that I don't want to sort of ruin the thing that I'm doing, really.
Yeah.
Or you know what I mean?
Completely,
I think I'm wording this very badly.
It's really interesting as well, because particularly in film and TV, it's such a, it's an industry that I've really struggled to adapt to on a creative side, because when I was doing music or with the podcast, if I wanted to do something, I just did it. And that's, again, what you get to do. You come up with an idea, you make it, you put it out. It's a beautiful process. Film and TV, you instantly find you seem to be having to ask loads of different people a permission to do it. You need to right. have a commissioner agree right. or a producer right. or this person or that person. And it's really weird because I've not figured out what the balance is yet. Part of me wants to just go, no, fuck it, I'll make these things myself. But part of me also has the humbleness to go, no, I need help from people who have experience in this area and that area to make something that isn't just the music videos or whatever else.
Mm. One of the things I've noticed really in the last year or so in conversations with television people is they're very keen in meetings to define what television is. So they go, oh no, with TV you have to do this and that, which didn't used to be the case, but I think that is partly being threatened by online comedy and the idea that people can do what they want. And people are doing some madly inventive stuff with online comedy. So TV feels like it has to define itself and go, no, you can't just do that on TV because you need this and that, when really you don't.
Yeah.
You know, but it's to really say, no, you have to, this is important what we do or whatever. You know, when really I sort of wonder now, I go, there's something very intrinsically funny about filming something on a phone to me. It looks funny. The kind of shit aesthetic of it. And one of the weird things that I've noticed in TV now is they try and do a lo-fi aesthetic, but spend a lot of money doing it.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm watching, like, there's some people online who do these sort of, people are using effects, like, you know, this guy, Alistair Becker King, where he's doing this amazing special effects and stuff. And, you know, people have got this technology at their fingertips and they're able to do this stuff. And I think that's probably quite a threat.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff you can't do online, which I think is true. You know, you can do, you know, there's some amazing sort of narrative comedies and stuff and characterization and long form stuff that you just can't replicate.
Yeah.
You know, but I think with other stuff, they sort of go, oh, no, you need to do this and that. But I don't know. I think it feels like we're on the verge of something completely new. I mean, looking at people like, you know, Tim Heidecker from used to do Tim and Eric, where he's self-funding his own series, you know, through a sort of Patreon, where he's filming stuff. He's got a crew. I think we're on the sort of precipice of that happening more now. And it's really just, you know, you've got Twitch, for example. You watch what Louis's doing, and he can switch on a camera and in, you know, he can film himself for half an hour and it's funnier than anything else you've seen.
Yeah.
You know, that's taken a year to write and make.
Limmy's a great example because I was watching him before we came on here. I watch him most mornings. It's Limmy that got me streaming on Twitch. But he never wants to do any TV again because he's found... And again, it's so hard for people to get their head round that he could probably have opportunities to do more stuff, but he's found the medium that works for him where he's got complete control, he can enjoy it. And as you say, there's some of the funniest things I've seen. I'm currently watching a guy on Twitch called Balmer, B-A-L-M-E-R, and he's doing, there's a Grand Theft Auto roleplay server. So everyone in there is just streamers or non-streamers, just playing characters. And honestly, I've watched more of that than any other TV show this year because the talent of these improvisers and the bonkers shit that can happen. Because again, it's the beauty of it being improvised as well is he'll often say, I'm going in, here's what I plan to do with my character today. But you never know who you're going to bump into. You never know what else is going to happen.
Right.
In this particular server, it's called A Quiet City. There's just... all these amazing talents. And as I said, I'm watching hour upon hour of that at the moment. And I'm behind on Game of Thrones. I'm behind on all these different huge multi-million dollar productions because these people with complete control over their characters are just making this amazing content.
Well, I think that's also, you've got to slightly adjust your brain and go, it's a completely new way of consuming content or you know, appreciating comedy than what we're used to. It feels very avant-garde, like that idea of what people are doing now. I mean, one of the things now, you think to yourself, what out of comedy, you go, what do I want? I want to laugh. I want cheering up. What am I going to do? Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm listen to a podcast with some funny people, like, you know, the Romesh and Tom Davis or whatever, that one. You go, these are two funny guys. I'm 100% going to laugh as soon as I switch it on. It's the quickest, what's the quickest way you can get to stuff? What's the quickest way I can learn about this thing? I'm going to listen to a podcast. I'm not watching an hour thing on BBC4 anymore. you know, I'm going on YouTube. What have I got? What's a 20-minute video on something? And, you know, there's people are doing this stuff.
Again, and another thing, just before we started, I saw that Adam Curtis has got a new documentary on the BBC, right. And I think he's amazing. Right. And I brought it up on my phone to record it onto my Skybox. Really excited about it. And then I saw it was seven episodes, and I went, oh, fucking.
I
should be excited. I should be excited because it's amazing. It'll be wonderful. Yeah. But that, I was hoping it was like an hour or 90 minutes.
I'm halfway through it. I'm on episode three.
Yeah.
And I put one on while I'm making my dinner. But it's brilliant. It's the best thing he's done. And he doesn't narrate it. And I wondered where I was watching it. I thought, I wonder if it's because people took the piss out of him. You know, it's easy to satirise his way of doing things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that narration he puts on it. There's no narration. And the aesthetic of it is amazing. But it is worth it, actually.
I will. Seven hours.
But yeah.
It's exactly that. It's so backwards to think, I'm really excited about something. Oh, there's more of it. Yeah. Ugh. That's annoying. Yeah. Like, that's not how it should be. I should be, yes.
Yeah.
7 hours of this wonder. Yeah. But I'll get that started.
But again, though, that's interesting, though, because we're talking about watching hours and hours of Twitch, and then we're like, oh, I'm not doing that for TV. Fuck that.
Yeah.
You know?
And similar with again, me and Brett talk about this all the time. He thinks the perfect film length is 90 minutes or thereabouts.
Oh, 100%.
Yet equally... Yeah. I'll watch a whole series on Netflix. I'll flick to a film and it'll say it's 2 hours 15, and I'll be like,
"No way,
no, probably not."
Yeah, I completely agree. I
seven more episodes of Money Heist, sure, go ahead, but two hours ten of this, no.
There's I subscribe to this channel called Shudder. It's like a horror film channel on Amazon, and a lot of the films on there are like 1 hour 15, 1 hour 20, and I'm like, "Oh, this is good. This is a good length." Yeah. You know, this is perfect for me.
I got shuddered to watch Host, and Host was 70 minutes long. It's like,
perfect.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I guess if you're, I don't know why really films have to be so long. I think, like,
I think it's for script writers to feel professional. If I'm if I've got a script and I've only got 60 pages, I kind of think I can't show this to anyone yet. That's not a proper script.
Yeah,
but it bloody is.
I think people sort of knock that idea, don't they? They go, "I think you'll find a film needs to be at least 3 hours for me to appreciate." It's like books as well. It's like, come on, all I want is tell me a good story and do it. Get on with it.
Yeah,
and I want to get on with my day. I don't want to be profoundly moved.
Yeah.
I'm busy.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to watch 7 hours of Twitch today. I haven't got time for this. Married at First Sight is a new season. I can't watch your film.
Exactly. Well, that's perfect place to end. Thank you very much for giving your time, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Alistair Green. I hope you enjoyed that chat. I think he's absolutely wonderful. If you're not already following him on socials, I don't know what you're doing. You need to get your act together, to be completely honest. Yeah, get him followed. Keep an eye on. I'm very excited about the film idea. That sounds amazing. So yeah, keep an eye on all that is to come from Mr. Green. And keep an eye on all that's to come from the Distraction Pieces podcast, because we've been here every Wednesday, we'll be here every Wednesday. Go and delve into the back catalogue if you want. We've got, I was going to say a list of guests, but on a few of the lockdown drunk casts, I've got two different drunk casts in the back catalogue with me, Chris and Stu, Brett Goldstein and Ramesh Ranganathan getting hammered for 5 or 6 hours. I've got one with me, Chris Stew, and James A. Caster and Ed Gamble getting hammered for 5 or 6 hours. So there's loads of messy stuff to get your teeth into if you're into that kind of thing. There's loads of more serious proper interview episodes as well. Brett and Ramesh and James and Ed have all been on independently as well, as have Izzy Sooty and Sarah Pascoe and Ashlyn B. and Catherine Ryan. Just thinking of comedians now. Frankie Boyle's been on a couple of times. Loads of lovely people. So yeah, delve into the back catalogue if you haven't already. Until next week, Stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.